Oh, right. Welcome to this brand new podcast over at gotchamovies.com that we're calling Unspooled Reel. I'm Ryan Oliver.
And I'm Jenny Nolf.
Jenny, why don't you tell our listeners a little bit how this podcast came to be and sort of what it's going to be like?
Well, it's kind of funny because I was texting Ryan and I was talking, well, you, and I was talking about how much I missed our podcast from the Gotcha Movies one. And since I kind of handed the reels over to, or the reins over to Jonathan and Taylor to do the Gotcha Movies podcast, I really wanted to do something a little bit more specific, less film, like film by film, week by week, new release style. And we're going to go over new release today, but I wanted to do something more genre specific because I'm a huge horror geek and I like sci-fi and fantasy and stuff like that. And then I pitched the idea to Ryan and he was pretty on board.
Oh, definitely. I'm not like the biggest fantasy person, but I hope to be after this podcast. And then, but I'm a big horror and sci-fi person and I'm a huge action person. So that's my, I guess, flip side to the fantasy. And yeah, I was completely on board because like you, I'd completely missed doing the Gotcha Movies podcast. And because of my recent career choices, which I have been loving, it's really limited my schedule. And so with this podcast, it allows us to not be on a timely basis. We're not, you know, like you said, we're not reviewing a new release every week. Some weeks we'll talk about a movie that's streaming on Netflix. Sometimes maybe we'll review an older movie that's been, who knows, dusted off or has an anniversary. I know that I'm kind of on the fly here, but I would love to talk about the movie Roar at some point that Drafthouse Films has unearthed, maybe in a future episode. But yeah, this podcast is going to be more genre specific, and there may not be a brand new episode every week, but we're going to make it worthwhile whenever we have a new episode.
Yeah, I'm super excited for this idea because I've always wanted to do a genre podcast and be able to unleash my horror nerdiness on people.
Which we did a little bit on the Gotcha Movies podcast to a degree. We did a Halloween episode that I think did really well. It was one of our more popular episodes. So yeah, I'm excited to do more of that, you know, diving into the vault of older movies and talking about what's new in genre.
Yeah, oh God, genre is so much fun.
Yeah, I can already tell this is going to be an exciting endeavor. But as you said, we are reviewing a brand new movie that is out theatrically. But before we get to that, is there anything you've been catching up with this week in film?
Well, not necessarily in film, but I've been watching The Fall on Netflix, and I totally love it. I'm obsessed. I love Gillian Anderson. She's amazing. And I've been getting obsessed with her since Hannibal, and then I watched a lot of X-Files, and then I needed a break from X-Files, and I was like, oh, how about The Fall? And it wasn't a bad choice. It's really, really excellent. I love the way they edit the show and how they parallel the serial killer versus the detective and what they're both doing. It's really kind of brilliant.
Nice. I've been meaning to check it out, and you said it's only like 5 or 6 episodes or something like that.
5 episodes or 6 episodes a season. It's 5 episodes the first season and 6 episodes the second season.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it's like a mini series almost.
Oh, well, that's perfect. That's perfect. I almost prefer that, actually, than a regular full season. Just, I feel each episode matters more in that way instead of like a lot of filler episodes.
Yeah, I definitely feel like that way with The Fall. And I watched Broadchurch as well recently, which is 8 episodes a season. And I'm on the last episode. It airs tonight. And yeah, that's another episode. That's another show that's like that, where it's like smaller, more condensed. Orphan Black's like that too. Even like Game of Thrones is like that.
Right. Oh, definitely. As far as what I've been catching up with, speaking of Hannibal, that's what I have been catching up with, is Hannibal. I had started it when it started and then completely fell off the wagon, not because of the show's fault, just because I'm really bad at catching up on shows. And so I've been catching up with that show, and I'm getting close to finishing season one, moving on to season two, and it's pretty great. And I'm surprised more people aren't watching it, because I think it's the best drama that's on network television, on like your big network channels.
Oh my God, I love Hannibal. Like, I have been like preaching to this choir for like two seasons because I love Brian Fuller and I feel like every single one of his shows, they're so brilliant, but they always get canceled for one reason or another. And
And I feel like, you know, especially because I know Hannibal has a lot of critical acclaim and like, you know, a really strong vocal fan base such as yourself and myself included now. And you know, I feel like every time that like ratings sweeps come up and whether shows are getting renewed or not, like all the Hannibal fans are just like on pins and needles. Like I've noticed on social network, just like, shit, is it going to get renewed? Is it going to get renewed? And then they breathe a sigh of relief that it gets renewed. It's just like, ah, yay. It got renewed.
Hey, unless the third season, I feel like picks up as far as audience and ratings go, I feel like it's going to get canceled. But they also said that they could perfectly like fit the show in three seasons at one point in time. So I'm not too worried. At least we got to the third season point. That's all I have to say.
Well, definitely. And I've been reading up on the third season and they're bringing in the character of Francis Dolarhyde, aka the Tooth Fairy, who's the main antagonist in the novel Red Dragon, which this series is mostly most in tune with and characters and story. So I can see where they could easily wrap it up in season three, which that character is going to be portrayed by the lead dwarf from the Hobbit movies, I believe, Richard Armitage.
Yeah. He got cast as that character. And but the bummer is Michael Pitt's character. Well, not Michael Pitt's character, but Michael Pitt got replaced.
Oh, that's disappointing.
Yeah, I don't remember who he got replaced by, but I remember I was really upset when I heard that. I was like, no. But, I mean, at the same time, his face is mutilated now. I guess it doesn't necessarily matter. And I think it was a good actor that they changed him to. So
nice. Well, I look forward to at least seeing what they do with that. As far as other things I've caught up with, I watched the pilot episode of Daredevil and I've been meaning to push forward further. I just haven't had any time to, but I think it really shows a lot of promise and could potentially be one of the best things Marvel has put out just solely because I feel it's very cinematic and I really liked it about that. Sorry, you were going
to
say something.
Oh, I was about to say, do you think the Netflix budget gives it that more cinematic feel to it? Because Netflix is allowed not to, like, they don't have that trailer break like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. or Agent Carter would.
I think the Netflix budget helps. And I also think the fact, and I was going to watch it anyway because I do really like the character of Daredevil and Matt Murdock, but it's TBMA. Which surprised me at the same time, because even though Daredevil's a more darker, grittier character, it's still a Marvel comic. But yeah, it's very like they swear and it's really brutal. So I feel like not having the like rating restriction lets the show kind of unleash. And I think that really helps it as well as the budget.
Yeah, that's something actually I was really surprised to hear, was that it's more like a gritty crime drama than it is like a cotton candy Marvel movie. And someone at work, one of my coworkers was saying that she like was trying to watch it with her son and then she immediately was like, nope, this is not for an 8-year-old.
Yeah, I think IndieWire or somebody called it like Marvel's version of The Wire. Oh. So that it's kind of an apt comparison from what I've seen so far. So yeah, it's definitely grittier than most Marvel fare, and that's what I like about it so far. So I'm definitely going to finish out that season. And it got renewed for season two, which was kind of a no-brainer.
But the showrunners are different. Did you read that part?
I did read that was different. I think Drew Goddard's still going to be involved, maybe. But he's doing a Spider-Man movie, though. So I don't know.
Yeah, I thought he already had left. I'm not quite sure. I know he's doing the Sinister Six Spider-Man movie, which he was doing before anyway. So.
Right. And then the final thing I've caught up with... Well, not even caught up with, but just got to see in a different light. Scream Factory yesterday put out a gorgeous collector's edition Blu-ray of Escape from New York. So I haven't got to watch any of the bonus features yet, but I immediately had to watch it. I went to a restoration screening of this movie like a year and a half ago at the Hollywood Theater in Portland. And usually when they do those, that means that like a new special edition version of the movie is coming out soon. But it had been like a year and a half, so I was just waiting for this new Blu-ray to come out because I had the DVD. And not only does it look doesn't look great, but like I've also worn it to death because it's one of my favorite movies. But yeah, the transfer looked amazing. So it was like watching it in a whole new light.
Scream Factory is really, really good at doing Blu-ray transfers, I've noticed, especially for old movies, to make them look like really beautiful and very spot on.
Yeah, absolutely. The only other one I've got to watch is my friend has the their restoration of They Live, another John Carpenter film. But yeah, I watched the copy of that and it's incredible. So yeah, I like their stuff. That's for sure.
Yeah, I own a Pumpkinhead and not the House on Haunted Hill, the Haunted House one they came out with that I had to review for them. So I have that one.
That's right. You had to review Pumpkinhead too, didn't you?
I did.
Is that why you have it?
Yeah. I got them for free.
I've still never seen Pumpkinhead, but I've been meaning to.
It's good stuff.
Stan Winston, right? Directed it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he directed it and then he did the special effects for it, which is what he's known for. So yeah, it's cool.
Nice. That's something I want to catch up with at some point. But yeah, so that's what we have been watching this week. Shall we move on to our review?
Yeah, we should. I'm so excited to talk about this movie.
I am too. So the movie that in contention that we are talking about is Ex Machina. So Ex Machina is the debut film from Alex Garland. He wrote the novel The Beach that Danny Boyle adapted into a film. He also, speaking of Danny Boyle, wrote the screenplays for Sunshine and 28 Days Later. He also co-wrote Dredd, the Judge Dredd movie that came out a couple years ago that was awesome but totally flopped. So this guy has definitely been around the filmmaking block, but he's making his makes his leap to the director's chair. It stars Domhnall Gleeson and it stars Oscar Isaac. I was totally blanked on his name for a second. I don't know why. And Alicia Vikander.
I think it might be Alicia Vikander because I know it's a European name.
It's Swedish.
Swedish, but I think it's Vikander.
I think you might be right. I probably totally butchered that name. But yeah, it's Alex Garland's directorial debut. It's what did you think of this this AI story?
Well, I really like AI movies, specifically AI. But I think that it's really interesting when movies will use people to be like machines and they give them like human aspects that make them feel real. I guess kind of like the replicants in Blade Runner, but I don't like Blade Runner as much as I like this movie. No offense, Ryan. But I thought it was really, really special. And like, I love the way it was paced. It just felt like a thriller, kind of like a, not like a condensed thriller almost.
Yeah, I was quite a fan of this movie too. And I like how, first of all, it did really remind me of AI. There's a scene where Oscar Isaac's character is talking to Domhnall Gleeson. Essentially, Oscar Isaac created a Google type search engine, is this like genius billionaire, and brings in Domhnall Gleeson, who's a coder at his company, to test this artificial intelligent being that he's created. She goes by Ava. And so he brings him in to test her over the course of a week. I think he wins a contest, I believe, is the setup to be able to do this within the company. There's a scene when Oscar Isaac's character tells Domhnall Gleeson that he said someday, you know, basically the AIs are going to take over and they're going to, you know, they're going to be looking back at us as like the fossils, as like, it's like the stepping stones for mankind. And I was like, wow, that's basically the third act of AI, essentially. So I thought that was really interesting. But yeah, I really liked how balanced this movie was. Like it struck a really, like, I was really on board the tone of this movie, especially coming so soon after Chappie, which is a movie that like I will defend to the bitter end as not being the like piece of shit that people are calling it, but it's definitely a messy movie. Like it's definitely a movie that like is tonally all over the place and doesn't really know where to put its emphasis. And Ex Machina just strikes a really like solid balance of like of thriller aspects, of like dark comedy aspects. And I like how minimalist it was, that it was like there was only three main characters and for the most part takes place in a single location. Reminded me of movies like Primer, in terms of just like the big ideas but small scale filmmaking. I'm quite a big fan of that technique, so I was almost immediately on board this movie.
Oh, I was too. I love like the whole, like, it's Frankenstein meets Pinocchio in a way, but like small scale, as you say. And there's something really great about the fact that it's like in one setting. And I feel like you also get to see these characters who present big ideas, but they also go into their big ideas, which is what a lot of like movies usually don't do. They just present a big idea and then they let the audience's mind wander. But I like how they actually have discussions and they're meaningful and you can actually quote this movie. And funny enough, Oscar Isaac's character is always like, oh, there you go with your quotes. But yeah, I felt like there's a lot of moments in this movie where you can like, yeah, you can quote this probably in reality and, you know, start a really like smart conversation.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And like even the movie is sort of like episodic structure, like something that I usually find to be very like dull in movies did not bother me here. Like I even though it's like the same structure of like they talk and discuss their process with the AI, and then Domhnall Gleeson will have a meeting with the AI, and there'll be a title card that says Ava, session one, session two, and then they'll discuss, you know, further analysis. But like, I feel like this, you know, I feel like the cycle really works in the movie because it is a sort of trial and error. Essentially, it's a, you know, a project. It's a science project. So I really think that structure helped the movie. I was into that as well.
I think it also helps in the way it's paced because it's almost like a countdown you can see it as. And so like every time you get like a bigger number in the title card, you realize the end's coming sooner and you kind of get more nervous every time that him and Ava meet or him and Oscar Isaac meet. Domhnall Gleeson's who I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they really ramp up the tension too each time. Like it really, this movie, I think, is an hour and 50 minutes and it doesn't feel like it at all. It's like you said, it's paced really, really well. And, you know, you feel this because you're seeing day three, day four, and each thing getting progressively stranger and more tense. You dread this, you know, inevitable end that it's going to come to. And I think it builds like steadily really well. And I went to see this movie, I think it was only in like what, 39 theaters before its expansion this weekend, something like that. It's pretty, not a lot of theaters.
Yeah, I think it was basically a New York LA release. Might as well have been.
Yeah, basically with like other major markets. You know, I went to a theater last Friday night in downtown Seattle. Went with a friend and coworker to go see it, and it was packed. The theater was really packed, which was heartening. Like I liked to see that this little movie was drawing a lot of attention and that people were interested in it. And I went with a buddy of mine who's like, we're almost like contrarians of each other. Like we just don't usually agree on things. And we both really liked the movie, but going in, we were talking about how like sci-fi is the one like genre, especially when you have like big ideas, it's the one genre that's like really prone to completely go off the rails in the third act. Like more often, not more often than not, but like it's more susceptible to that. And it was a pleasant surprise that this movie didn't, and it kept its balance and kept it level headed throughout the entire film.
I agree. I think the pacing's really great, like you mentioned. And I like how it doesn't go off the rails at the end, because you say sci-fi can do that. And I feel like I've seen a ton of sci-fi movies where it's just, it goes insane almost. And there's a point in this movie where it could have gone insane, but because of the lack of like a lot of characters, because of the minimalistic like approach, because I feel like Alex Garland has some practice in writing screenplays and writing stories, he was able to keep the third act at bay and still make it work, even though it kind of goes bigger.
It goes bigger, and it really also, like, without, like, heavily spoiling anything, it really kind of shifts into, like, you know, you kind of think you know who the main character of this movie is, or at least who the central focus is, and it completely shifts it and, like, you know, tells you whose story it was really about this entire time. I thought that was really, really fascinating, and you know, as much as I can sing Oscar Isaac's praises, because I feel like he just really can't do any wrong as an actor right now. And he definitely has the more showier performance and the more like like, you know, the quotable lines that you were talking about, the laugh out loud moments. But I feel like we really have to praise Alicia Vikander for her performance in this movie. I think she's, I mean, she's the glue, I think, that really holds this movie together.
She's brilliant. And she, I feel like she starred in, A Royal Affair, which was nominated for an Oscar. And she was the lead in, I believe, that movie. And she's done a few small bit roles. I think she was in The Seventh Son earlier this year, but she's in a ton of other things. And she's an Oscar bait at the end of the year, like The Light Between Oceans and The Danish Girl. She's in both of those. And I feel like she's going places in this movie, especially shows that she is.
Absolutely. And I love too, like the special effects in this movie are incredible, but they're not like, you know, they're not showy special effects. Like, I know I keep using that word showy, but like the way her character is like portrayed and designed, I feel is really incredible, but it's not like a, hey, look at our cool special effects budget. It's for a purpose.
Well, that's also another thing, is that she looks real, and she looks like she kind of like folds into the scenery rather than she stands out as like this huge special effect with like tons of gadgets and gizmos. She actually looks like a real robot, a real person.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. She didn't look like Chappie, essentially.
Yeah.
if we're talking about AI movies, more importantly, recent AI movies.
I would compare the way they did her CGI work and obviously motion capture work. I would say it's motion capture work. More to like Dawn of the Planet of the Apes or something like that.
Oh,
where
absolutely.
It like looks like it's in the movie rather than, oh, I can see that. That is not real.
Yeah, absolutely. It fits in the universe that they're setting up. Yeah, and again with the tight quarters, like it just makes the movie just that much more intense when it gets to it, because you know I get claustrophobic, so the fact that there's really nowhere to go in this movie when it really ramps up definitely had me pinned to my seat. And like the fact that with anything with like, you know, technology getting better and technology overthrowing, it's definitely something that could potentially happen at some point. So it definitely ramps up the terror factor.
Thanks. I haven't seen Terminator, but I mean like Skynet.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Something like that. Yeah. Those movies I think are, at least the first Terminator definitely is like terrifying.
Yeah. But you mentioned Oscar Isaac earlier, and he's one of the most interesting characters, I think, cause they kind of set him up to be this villain, but I never saw him as that. And because I my boyfriend has this friend that like just reminded me of that guy, like super smart but also kind of socially awkward, and like, but he drinks a lot and he like works out a lot, and he's kind of like a meathead, kind of like a frat bro type, but he's also super intelligent. And I felt like they set him up to be like I said, a villain of the movie, at least in the very beginning, but then towards the end you realize he's really not the villain.
No, definitely. He could potentially be in a it's not as cut and dry. Like, it's not as black and white as the movie was leading it on to believe, which I really like, because it gets into this really like murky gray area, because it's like, yeah, you see, like, especially his fate in the movie, like you see what his creations are capable of, but at the same time, did he, you know, drive them to become that way? So that's also a question I feel that has come into. I feel like, again, it gets into a really good, I still feel he is a villain, but I understood his perspective more by the end of the movie, to the point where it, like, again, it's this muddled gray area that I really appreciated.
Yeah, I just felt like he was I can't use specific examples, I guess, to not be too spoilery, but I feel like he's just a really lonely guy, and he lived like in this house with like basically no human contact. He lived with this Japanese woman that doesn't even speak English, and this guy comes along and he tries to get buddy buddy with him, but the guy ends up really not trusting him. I don't think he even trusts him from the start. I think he's always kind of wary, because Oscar Isaac's character is just so strange, because he's socially awkward, which makes sense for his character as like some 13-year-old genius that kind of like secluded himself from the world, and he just doesn't know. I feel like he just doesn't know what's socially Right. And something that was really interesting is they mentioned, I believe it towards the end of the second act, Oscar Isaac is like, well, what's wrong with eliminating and reprogramming her brain and her memories? She's just like a robot. But like Domhnall Gleeson's character takes this stance where he's like, no, it's not just a robot. It's something that has feelings. And it kind of brings a lot of the themes together in that one conversation where they talk about that.
Oh, yes, I totally agree. And the conversation too about like the other thing I thought was really interesting too, that to further complicate things with, you know, with Oscar Isaac's intentions or not, and especially like AI learning different things. Like there's a scene where he talked about like, you know, how your mind is not like, you know, you're programmed to be a certain way. Like, you know, he used the example. He's like, say your thing is black chicks. And he's like, you know, that's, he's like, you don't know why, you don't know how, that's just a thing you're into. And I think he used like, you know, whether you're gay or straight, like, it's not like something you choose. It's just something that's like your mind learns. So it's interesting to figure out whether or not like the consciousness of the Ava character, you know, was she, you know, just from the beginning set out to not like her creator, or, you know, is that something that he forced her to feel? And I feel like that, again, complicates things in a really interesting way.
I think he definitely plays an act for, at least with Ava during the movie, I think he pushes her to certain levels so she'll react a certain way with Domhnall Gleeson's character. And I think it's really interesting to kind of think about that, like, she's a robot. So, I mean, she is a robot when it comes down to it. She's not a real person, which is like something that you have to like keep reminding yourself during the movie. You're like, oh, wait, no, she's a robot. She's programmed to do these things. It's just he can't see that she is. And it's just kind of a balance of, is she programmed to get him to be attracted to her? Or is she programmed to be friendly with him? Or is she programmed to try to do something else? Like, what the sessions that they're having, it's just very interesting to think about like how she was programmed and what a part of her programming was influenced by Oscar Isaac's character or not.
Right. Or if she was, or if they took the logic, like if the logic applied that happened in Chappie, and I don't want to like, you know, dwell too much on that movie, but the idea is like the consciousness, like, you know, started out like a child essentially, and then it grew, but it wasn't programmed to do anything other than to learn and think and feel like a human. So there's also that question, is like, is that the type of like program and logic that comes into play with the Ava character in this movie? Like, was she just programmed to learn and to, you know, absorb ideas, or was she programmed to act a certain way? It's I like that the movie's not clear about that.
Yeah, because you never really get, because you are seeing the whole movie basically through Domhnall Gleeson's eyes, you don't really ever see what Oscar Isaac actually totally intended to do. And because he's also kind of so crazy, you can never really pinpoint what exactly he's doing. Like, I think one of my favorite scenes in the movie, and they came out with like some video, A24 came out with a video today of like dancing for both the movies they have in theaters. And he like gets up and Domhnall Gleeson's like accusing him of certain things, and then he's like, you know what I want to do though? I want to dance. And then he and the Japanese girl that lives with him just go at this like routine that they have planned, and to this crazy song, and the light disco lights like flash like blue and red. It's really funny but kind of disturbing.
I was just about to say that exact same thing, that it's really funny, but it like it's really uncomfortable at the same time. Like, I didn't really know how to feel while I was watching that scene.
It's a really good scene, and I kind of want to watch it again and again and again. I really wish they had released a full clip of that and not a clip that's intertwined with While We're Young.
Which is a movie I still haven't seen, sidebar, that I really want to, and I need to see it before it leaves theaters. But I really like that scene. I really like the just, you know, the humorous touches of the movie to kind of like, again, they would alleviate some of the tension, but also like make you feel more like uncomfortable and wonder where the movie's going. And like we said, the movie doesn't go off the rails in the third act. I don't know if you've ever seen, have you ever seen Sunshine?
Yeah.
The Danny Boyle film?
The one that does go off the rails in the third act where you're like, what the hell just happened?
Right, where Alex Garland did write the script for that movie and it goes completely off the rails in the third act. I think in a good way, but like it definitely has that. And I was, you know, I was wondering if Ex Machina was going to be that way. And it doesn't. It's a very seamless, small, introspective movie that I really loved, and I don't want to put labels on it because it's so, you know, early into 2015, but this I would say is probably my favorite movie of the year so far, if I had to pick.
It's up there with Cinderella, which I don't know what that says about this year.
Yeah, I was about to say, because I haven't seen Cinderella, but I think my previous you know, one I would have championed was It Follows, which I know we didn't want to talk about, and we won't dwell on it because it's been talked about death. But that movie, like, as much as I liked it, I saw it twice, and like, it didn't have that impact for me the second time.
Oh my God, you too?
That it did the first time.
Can we actually talk about that a little bit? Because I felt the same way, and people think I'm crazy.
No, it's a really good movie. Like, there is no doubt about that. It's a very good movie. And, you know, David Robert Mitchell's, like, just his grasp on the atmosphere, like, he struck a perfect tone, which I know I already said about Ex Machina, but it's true. But there was just something about it. I think maybe it's one of those movies that, like, it has a little bit of a twist. And I feel like once you see it coming and you watch it a second time, you kind of start to pick apart the logic, whereas the first time it just casts a really good spell. Which, you know, it's great filmmaking, and I was completely under it, and I still think it's a really strong movie. I just the logic started to crumble for me more on a second viewing, and that's how I knew that, you know, it's not going to become like a classic, because it just, you know, I don't think it's going to like hold up as strong, but it is a solid movie. There's no denying that.
Yeah, no, it definitely, I felt like it unraveled in the third act. While, I mean, I haven't seen Ex Machina for a second time, but I feel like that's a movie where watching it, I feel like it probably wouldn't unravel, and it would still have the same beats that it works, because Alex Garland also has a lot more practice.
Yeah, absolutely. And the other thing too is, like, Ex Machina leaves you with a lot to digest. So I think, so I think, you know, it would benefit from a second viewing, because you can start to unpack those ideas that it gets at more, and kind of and figure out, like, once you know where it's going, you can kind of dissect, you know, what it all means. And whereas, like, It Follows, again, casts like a beautiful, like, hypnotic spell of a movie, but at the same time, it's like it still has a logic that it doesn't leave you with a lot other than, like, you know, that was a thrilling experience, but nothing more than that.
Right. And back to Ex Machina, though, like, something that you mentioned too is that the kind of timeless feel to it is that it does kind of renew timeless ideas. Like, I felt like I mentioned, it's like Frankenstein meets Pinocchio, which are two very tales old as time stories. And I felt like more Pinocchio than Frankenstein, but it does have that Frankenstein ideology where Oscar Isaac's character comes in and, like, should people be making life, and people that, like, are machines that are basically, like, human. And then it also has that aspect of Pinocchio, and AI kind of did that too, because it's a sci-fi version of Pinocchio where it's like robots wanting to be human, but it also doesn't dive into them the same way that those previous, like, renditions of these tales have done, and they kind of expand on these ideas a little bit more, which I feel like is better than movies like, say, The Lazarus Effect, which just regurgitates the Frankenstein ideology to you and doesn't really add anything to it, and doesn't necessarily write it better.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's you know, I'm going to mention Chappie again, but it's super apt, whereas that movie is does regurgitate the Frankenstein monster idea, like, story specifically from a movie, like, it almost, like, lifts completely from a movie that did it way better years before, was RoboCop. So it already lifted from a movie that already lifted from the Frankenstein story and put its own spin on it. Whereas this one, like, yeah, it takes those ideas, and that's what I love about genre, and what I love about, you know, what this podcast will become is that because, you know, you take these themes that have been around a long, long time and you just inject them into films and see what filmmakers put their own spin on them. And I think that's really fascinating. And especially too, because Alex Garland has had a mind meld before with Danny Boyle, who's someone who's very like stylistic and does some crazy sci-fi movies, to see that like him as a director wasn't like trying to, ape the style of his, you know, collaborator or maybe mentor. I'm not sure. Like maybe the way that Ryan Gosling's latest film or his directorial debut does lift from his mentor, Nicholas Winding Refn. Like this, it's fascinating to see something that Alex Garland did. That's just like, it's not original in its concept, but it's original in the way that it presents ideas.
Yeah, exactly. It's original in the way it presents its ideas. And it also, I think it's smart in the way it presents its ideas. Not only is it original, but it's intelligent, and it knows it's intelligent. And it also,
it knows it's intelligent without like insulting your intelligence. It invites the audience in to see, you know, what is going on. It doesn't like try to like alienate the audience, and be like, hey, look how smart and frustrating I am. No, it's an intelligent movie made intelligently, but is not like insulting either.
I want to say that has to do with the characters. Like I said, like Oscar Isaac's character, he's kind of like a bro, like frat guy.
He's relatable. And yeah. Domhnall Gleeson's character is relatable. Like he's got this baggage, and he kind of like his character. I mean, he's got the more quiet performance, but like he, you know, his character really kind of like lays his demons out there, I think, for everybody. So it's like he immediately, you know, acknowledges his flaws as a human being. And we recognize that and we sympathize with that. And we immediately identify with that character.
Yeah, I definitely identified with his character. It's kind of interesting. I know you haven't watched Black Mirror, have you?
I haven't yet. No.
Yeah. Well, in one of the Black Mirror episodes, he plays an artificial intelligence robot. So it's really interesting to see him on the other side as well.
Really? That's fascinating. And it's also interesting that, you know, both Oscar Isaac and Domhnall Gleeson are in this movie, and they're going to be in Star Wars in December. So I thought that was really interesting to see, I guess, them in a movie together before that happens.
Even more funny that they mentioned Star Trek. I mean, yeah, I know they're not the same, but I just was like, oh, that's kind of interesting. They mentioned Star Trek and they're going to be in a Star Wars movie, which is directed by a director who did a Star Trek movie. So
it's like the 6 degrees of J.J. Abrams. Yeah, kind with this of. Movie. and who knows, with this trend of like big franchises plucking like indie directors, Alex Garland will probably direct a Star Wars movie at some point. So
there's
who knows?
Definitely enough Star Wars movies in the making for them to pull him around.
Oh, definitely, to choke a camel. I know, like they're coming, and they're coming fast. But I think all in all, I think this is a like really solid small indie movie that, you know, I think A24 too has been really, really smart about their rollout of this movie. It had I think the highest per theater average of the year in its New York LA weekend, and then expanded to 39 theaters last weekend when we both saw it. And did really, really well. And now it's expanding to wide release before we get bombarded by the Avengers in the week after. So, if you need that tie over, this is definitely something to seek out.
Oh, yeah, definitely. And I would have been looking forward to this movie since South by Southwest when I missed it. Kind of on purpose, because I knew that there was a few writers seeing it from Gotcha Movies already. And I was like, you know, I can pay for this movie and not feel bad about that.
Well, yeah, definitely, especially because you knew this movie was coming out in April, you know, like when you go to a festival like South By or Fantastic Fest, it's always fun to see the movies that like you don't know when they're coming out or if they're coming out, and it might be your only chance to see a certain movie. So it's like the big movies, it's like, yeah, you know, Trainwreck, woohoo, it's still coming out in July. Like you can go see that whenever. So, yeah. And plus, this is a movie that, you know, could use the box office love. So it's it's got my dollar, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think it was also really, I mean, I know A24 didn't know this was gonna happen, but it released in the UK, I believe, way before it released over here. I think that was like in January or something, right? Am I not wrong?
I don't know if that's like 100% accurate, but it did come out in the UK first, like at least a month before. I don't know how early or it was, but I know it was definitely quite a bit before that. Okay. Yeah, I don't know if they knew that either, but again, I'm just glad they're really smart, because I really love them as a distributor, but they, you know, they had a couple false moves last year, I think, like in terms of expanding too fast, like the Rover and Tusk, I think that went too wide too fast, and then disappeared from theaters. So, I think that's, yeah, I think they made a very smart move with this movie.
Yeah. And they kind of also, I feel like, I know some people don't agree, but I think A Most Violent Year is so, so, so good, and a lot better than a lot of the movies that were nominated for Best Picture last year. And I felt like they kind of missed the ball by putting it out on New Year's Eve. I was like, ah.
Yeah, but only in like what, 4 theaters?
Yeah.
That was their Oscar qualifying release date, basically. But yeah, I feel like they dropped the ball on that, and then it didn't get nominated for anything, and then they were kind of stuck, like, when they were, like, released it. Because I remember when I was still living in Portland, like, even though I missed the press screening, because it was in, like, November, and I had to work or something, but they kept pushing the release date back, like, every week. It was like, oh, Most Violent Year is coming out next week would come. Oh, no, it's coming out the next week. It's like, okay, when is it coming out? Like, so yeah, they kind of got stuck when that movie got no love with the Academy.
Yeah, but I think they did a very good job with While We're Young this year so far, and Ex Machina. So they're 2 for 2, and those movies are both out this weekend. So.
Oh, definitely. And yeah, and what I love Noah Baumbach, and I just can't believe I haven't seen While We're Young. But again, I've just been slammed. I haven't got a chance to. But it's definitely my next thing I want to see. And I think they're also putting out Slow West. It's coming out here pretty soon. Yeah, which I've heard nothing but great things about. I think it played at Tribeca this last week. Yeah, that looks really exciting. So, yeah, looking forward to that. And they're just, an exciting up-and-coming distributor. Though they are putting out Dark Places, and it's kind of got no buzz going for it. So I'm a little worried about that one.
Not yet. Not yet. But it's a French movie, and it's made by a French director. That movie hasn't come out yet in France. I think that they were kind of in limbo for a while with that, because Gone Girl came out, and they were like, oh, we should probably wait until Gone Girl comes out for now, because it's written by Gillian Flynn.
Yeah.
It looks really awesome, though. I saw the trailer, and I haven't read the book yet, but I read Sharp Objects, and if Dark Places is anything like Sharp Objects or Gone Girl, it's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah, I've read like the first third or quarter of Dark Places, and I'm into it so far.
Oh, you're reading?
Yes, yeah, I am.
What?
big whoop. Want to fight about it? Yeah. So I'm reading that right now. So, but yeah, overall, Ex Machina, we recommend it.
Yeah, I would definitely recommend Ex Machina. It's easily one of the coolest movies I've seen in theaters this year.
Yeah, definitely for me too. And yeah, it's we'll see. I mean, there's a lot of good promising stuff coming out very soon. But who knows? This could end up in my top 10 by the end of the year. But it's only April, so I'm not gonna make any assumptions.
I definitely, a lot of people at South By were like, this is definitely top 10 material. And so it kind of made me wary when going into it. But watching it, I was like, yeah, no, if this year really sucks as much as it has been sucking, this is definitely top 10 material.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I would agree. Especially, like, I think the last time I heard so many people say, like, this was top 10 material this year was people coming out of Kingsman. And then I came out of it. I was like, fuck you. This is a terrible movie. What are you people thinking? But whatever. I'm a minority in that one. I know.
I haven't seen it.
It's okay. It's childish and juvenile and not worth your time.
If I've seen, I feel like I've seen Kick-Ass already. I don't need to see it again.
Exactly. That's how I feel. And yeah, anyway, that's for another day. But, so I guess before we wrap up, we don't have a name for this segment yet, but we came up with this idea to, at the end of an episode, And maybe we'll do this like every two episodes, just because there's always so many movies to watch as it is. We were each going to recommend a movie from Netflix to each other, and then we report back in a later episode of what we thought about each of our choices. Which are you on board that?
Yeah, I am.
Awesome. Do you want to start?
Yeah, I do, because I've already told you what it is. You haven't told me yours, which makes me really nervous because you're going to make me watch something that you've been trying to make me watch for a long time.
Oh, I totally
Oh, you
am.
will.
Yeah.
I choose A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night, which actually came out on Netflix, I believe, yesterday. And it's such a good movie. It made its rounds last year at Sundance. I think it was last year. And it's a female directed, like, Iranian Western that's like filmed in California, but it's a vampire movie.
Nice. I've heard nothing but stellar things about this movie, and I was going to try and watch it before we recorded this episode so we could talk about it. But I think between the Escape from New York Blu-ray and recording my other podcast last night, just didn't get around to it. But it's definitely high on my list of things to watch, and I will watch it if not before next episode, before the one after that.
Yeah, well, obviously, because I just recommended it to you. It's a really short film. It's 1 hour 40, so it's on the shorter side. It feels so good, and I there's a it's just the way it's paced. It kind of has this like almost hypnotic trance. You'll probably hate it because you don't like Spring or Only Lovers Left Alive, but I'm
I
such a
don't hate either of those movies by any stretch of the word. I think they're interesting movies. I just think they're, I guess maybe not being my type of movie. I also felt both those movies are too long, but this is a shorter movie than both those movies that you name checked.
Yeah, and it feels so good to watch this movie. And I had to split it up in two because I kind of fell asleep because I started it really late at night. But even like splitting it up, like what first half one day and second half the other day, I was like glued to my seat watching this movie. And I keep thinking about it.
Awesome. Well, I'm excited to watch it. My pick for you, yeah, it is something that I've actually been trying to get you to watch for a really long time, and now I have the power to do so. I already name checked it on this episode, and it is RoboCop.
Damn it.
Yeah. And it's
I
not,
felt it coming.
and it's not, I almost did Total Recall, but I know you're not like a big Schwarzenegger person, so I spared you and went with I think a better Paul Verhoeven movie. I'm not talking about the remake. I'm talking about the 1987 original. Yeah, it is on Netflix, and yeah, it's one of my favorite movies. I think it's like really, really hilarious and really, but also really poignant. And it's super, super bloody and super gory, like almost like gratuitously so. But it's a movie that I think like really, really holds up today even, and that's why I think we didn't need a remake because I think the original is already so timeless. So, but it takes place in Detroit, somewhere that you're very like keen to. So there's that going for it.
That is true. Since my mom and dad are both from Detroit, I'm a huge fan of
Yeah.
watching movies that are based in there. So I will give it a shot. I know it's actually leaving Netflix soon, so I'm going to have to watch it soon.
You will definitely have to watch it soon. Oh, that's a bummer that it's leaving.
I know. I thought I saw it today, and I was like, yeah, it's leaving on May 1st, so I'll have to watch it before then or rent
Oh,
it.
yes. But it's worth your time for sure. So yeah, that's our bets, and I guess I don't know what we'll do for an upcoming episode. Like I said, this show, this particular podcast for the site's not going to be not might not necessarily be week to week. We're on no like time crunch. I know for sure that we talked about before we recorded this episode. We're definitely going to do a Mad Max episode when Mad Max Fury Road comes out, so you can look forward to that. I don't know what we'll do before then, but we'll definitely brainstorm it. I guess any other thoughts you have before we sign off?
Watch Ex Machina. You should probably also watch AI if you haven't seen it, and watch A Girl Walks Home Alone at Night and RoboCop.
Yes, yeah, watch all those movies. And as much as we say It Follows doesn't hold up on a second viewing, if you haven't seen it for a first time, I recommend that too. If you watch Ex Machina and you're like, oh, I'm gonna double feature, I would say go check out It Follows as well. So I would say, yeah, I think that's a wrap on this first episode. We're working on getting the podcast on iTunes. Well, mainly I just need to set up a stream to get it on there. But this podcast will be available on gotchamovies.com. And so you can definitely listen to it there. And you can also follow us on Twitter at gotchamovies and like us on Facebook. Jenny, you do another podcast as well outside of the site. What is the name of that podcast?
It's called Film Geek Army, and it's awesome. It's a little bit more lax, I would say, as far as structure goes. We talk about news, and then we have a movie of the week. But it's fun, and I chat with two guys that are way older than me that kind of pick on me sometimes, but they're fun. And you also are on another podcast, Ryan. Yeah,
yes, I am on another podcast as well called Over Under Movies, and we pick one overrated movie and one underrated movie, and we discuss them. The trend almost seems to be like it's an older movie from the 70s that's the underrated and a contemporary movie that's overrated, but not always the case, but that just seems to be the trend as of late. But yeah, I do that, and that podcast is on iTunes, so you can check that out.
Yeah. Oh, Film Geek Army is also on iTunes.
Nice. Well, yeah, thank you for listening to this episode. We hope you enjoyed it. And yeah, please leave us feedback. Again, this is a brand new podcast. So, you know, any sort of feedback is appreciative, and we'll definitely take it into consideration as we kind of mold this podcast into what it's going to become.
Yeah, I'm really excited for this podcast because it's something... Genre is something that I hold very close and dear to my heart, especially since I am a huge Fantastic Fest goer. So I've loved it ever since I started film school. It's the reason I'm in film school, is because of horror movies. So
absolutely. Yeah, it's good stuff. And I hope to make it down to that festival this year if my schedule allows to. So we'll see.
Hopefully.
Yes, hopefully. Well, thank you for listening, and join us for our next episode, which will come up soon.
Yeah, so excited!